Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And believe me, this is going to be all about mind power. Donna Sebo here, and we have a guest from the Monroe Institute. In fact, he is the executive director. Perhaps you've heard about the Monroe Institute, perhaps not. And I like to think, if you have, that what we're going to share with you today is going to expand your awareness of this wonderful organization even more. And if you've never heard about the Monroe Institute, I think you're going to want to know more because of the difference that it can make in your life, your thinking, and the results of positive moving forward because of the changes of your thinking, which produces changes in your actions. Now, before I go to my guest, who is Paul Rademacher, what I wanted to give is a quote, and it's by James Allen. And he had a little book called As a Man Thinketh, and this is a statement, one sentence out of this little book. All that a man achieves and all that he fails to achieve is the direct result of his own thoughts. But what if you don't know what to do with your thoughts? What if you are that type of person that's questioning belief systems you have? Well, I think my guest is going to be able to share a fascinating story with you that may take you on a journey you had never expected, a journey of mind. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's just such a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a delight. Now, my listeners may not be aware that you are an author of The Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, which
Correct.
Is all about your personal journey and your story of how you evolved from a particular mindset, a particular belief system, and you ended up at the Monroe Institute. Would you share a little bit of that with my listeners?
Well, I think that the brief story is that when I was a building contractor, I had a mystical experience and entered into a different dimension entirely from anything that I thought was possible. And that was something that was so stunning to me that I had, up to that time, I'd been wrestling with whether or not I should go into the ministry because I was having a real sense of calling to do that. And when I had this mystical experience that happened when I fell off the roof of a house we were building, it opened up such a new vista for me and a new world that at one level I thought that that was the answer to my question, that I obviously this is the voice of God and calling me into the ministry. But on another level, it was something that was much deeper than that. For me, it was something that created a real hunger and a desire to want to get back to that world again, to experience it on a personal level more consistently, but also to move into this work in a more dynamic way than what I was able to do. I ended up going to seminary because of that experience and graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary after 3 years with a Master of Divinity degree. And I think in the back of my mind, I was hoping I could connect with this world through the work that I was doing in the church. But the life of a pastor is pretty kind of a squirrely animal because, you know, your time is taken up in so many other directions. And so I found that in order to touch that world again, I had to go off into all kinds of conferences and seminars that were pretty far outside of the mainstream tradition that I was a part of. And these were things that I would never tell any of my parishioners about. And so they'd say, well, where are you going for your study leave? And I'd say, well, I'm going in for a meditation retreat or something like that. So there was always this tension between that experience, the direct personal experience of this other world, and what I was doing for my professional life as a pastor. And that tension got so strong over the years that eventually in the year 2000, I began to realize that this work of exploring the metaphysical world, this work of experiencing different ranges of consciousness was really the prime motivator in my life. So I left the church in the year 2000, and it was shortly after that that I began to work with the Monroe Institute, because the Monroe Institute was one place where I found where I could really begin to reconnect with that world that I experienced when I fell off the roof. Never dreaming that when I made that transition that I would end up into being the executive director of this place, but it's been quite a journey that seems pretty strange from the outside, but it has its own internal logic too.
Oh, most definitely. And I had the opportunity to be at your facility last year and mm-hmm. meet you in person. And, of course, we had the interview last year about your book, which had come out. And mm-hmm. it was just such a wonderful exchange. But when I was walking the property, there was also this absolute feel of tremendous beauty. It's just gorgeous. But I want to share with my audience a quote that you have that is relative to the Monroe Institute. You say, "The exploration of human consciousness is the next great frontier. It emerges from the very core of what it means to be, to perceive, to experience, to search for meaning. Therefore, what we do at the Monroe Institute is not ancillary to the human condition. It is central and of critical importance." And when I was there, you were having some classes, and you also showed me the area where the equipment was so that everything was moderated, because there is so much tonality that is done in the different classes that you offer there. And since I've been there, my goodness, you have just added so much to the curriculum. You've got something for professionals, and you have something I want to talk about. It's called the Gateway Experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you went through this yourself, and there are levels to the Gateway Experience, and people can do this, but how many levels did Robert develop before he passed away?
Well, that's a good question, my sense is that he probably was, I know he was exploring Focus 27, and maybe for your benefit of your listeners, let me go back and just describe what we mean by focus levels for a minute, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Focus, the reason why he chose focus levels and then attached numbers to them was because he wanted to have a descriptor that was pretty neutral. One of the things that we try very hard at the Institute to do is to not to prejudice people or to bias their experience before they have the experience. And so you can put descriptors that can set up expectations for people, or you can choose descriptors that are pretty neutral. And he felt like numbers were pretty neutral. So, for instance, the first place that he discovered, and we're looking at basically destinations in the consciousness. So the first place that he explored was what eventually called Focus 10, and that is the mind awake, body asleep. And that's the first destination point in both the Gateway Voyage, which is our introductory program at the Institute, and also the Gateway Experience, which is the take-home or the home study course that people can engage in if they can't come to the Institute. Mm-hmm. So you've got Focus 10, the state of mind awake, body asleep. After that, we go to Focus 12, which is the state of expanded awareness. Focus 15, then, which is the state beyond time, sometimes beyond space. Focus 21, which is the bridge state between physical and non-physical reality. And then eventually up to Focus 27, which is what Robert Monroe called the park, which is a sort of a destination point for people, a gathering place for people after they pass through the process of death. And so there's a great deal to explore in that. And, you know, as I say, in his later years, he was getting up to 27 and probably far beyond that, too, but may not have given that a number. But what's interesting to know, though, is that the bulk of his early work was confined to that initial state of focus 10, and that's what much of the material in his books comes from that period.
I know that there is a CD which I'm actually playing in the background right now. You probably can't hear it, but I can hear it. It's called Waves of Love with Hemisync. That's HEMISYNC. And the musical arrangement on this and the tones are just absolutely fabulous, absolutely wonderful. And one of the images that you have on the back of your CD programs, and of course your catalog is quite extensive, that people, if they want to get it, we'll give them information later about how they can. But the statement says the meta music, which is what this is, it's not just the music. What's going on behind the music?
Good question. What Monroe Products has done with in producing these is that they will often take a particularly conducive piece of music for what we're working toward, and then they will embed the hemisync signals within that music. So that the intent is that with as you're playing the music, and it can be used for different purposes. But as you're playing that over your stereo system, it can help to move you into states of creativity or greater alertness or, a greater sense of connection, unity. So there are many different purposes for this, but the signals that are in the background that we call hemisync are based on binaural beats. And what that means is that, and I'm going to give you a very simplified version of something that's much, much more complex. But what we do is, if you had headphones on, what we would do would be put one signal in one ear and then a signal in the other ear that's just a little bit different in pitch. And if you've ever listened to somebody tuning a guitar or a piano, when two tones get close together but not quite the same pitch, you will hear sort of a wavering or a vibrato that gets produced. And that vibrato is the hemisync tone. And when you've got headphones on, both sides of the brain help to produce that, or they have to work together in order to produce that third signal, which is that third tone. And we find that when that happens, when both sides of the brain start to work in concert, then there's a great amount of exploration that can come from that. And so underneath the meta music, we've embedded these hemisync signals so that it can be really some very beneficial states for you.
I'd like my listeners to also know that Robert Monroe had done years of research and worked with some other very professional individuals who had a empathetic, sympathetic curiosity like he did, because he had had many out-of-body experiences through his life, and he wanted to understand certain things more than he could ever get out of any book that had been written. Mm-hmm. And then when he was doing this, there was really quite a number of years invested in the use of tones and in the use of, how do I say, the spacing of the tones, the pacing of the tones, the different things that affect the brain. And today, and he didn't have the technology we've got today.
That's correct.
Today we're actually able, with a very sophisticated level, to see how the brain is responding to this. And you have some photographs of that on the back of your CDs, where when people are listening to these programs, the brain actually is processing so much information. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. And I can remember years ago people saying, well, if you're going to do study and you've got a lot of things that you're needing to memorize and learn, play classical music at very, very low, or it's just barely audible. And I can't remember if it was Bach or Mozart. It was one of the two. Maybe it's both. I don't know. I don't remember now, but it was playing either one of them, and you put them in the background, and you're going to be able to study much better.
Mm-hmm.
So this
That was called the Mozart effect, as I recall, and that got a lot of publicity for quite a while. And when Bob Monroe was, you mentioned his expertise and use of sound. I think it's important for people to understand that that was not something that he discovered late in life. That actually was his life work. Mm-hmm. He was involved in radio, was a very prolific writer and producer, and actually became a vice president of what was called Mutual Broadcasting System back then, and worked on some very famous radio shows. Perhaps the most famous of them all was a show called The Shadow. And so he really understood sound, and it was a natural segue for him once he started having these spontaneous out-of-body experiences, which I can assure you he was not looking for in any way. They just mm-hmm. started happening to him. He began to wonder if there was some way that he could use sound to help to control this out-of-control thing, and also maybe to help other people to begin to explore these ranges of consciousness that he was stumbling into himself. And it still amazes me to this day to think that here was a guy who had no roadmap for him whatsoever, because this was not out-of-body experience was not part of the conversation nationally at all, and he was really on his own, having to invent his way as he went along. And now we are the beneficiaries of so much of that groundbreaking work that he did. And the longer I'm a part of this, the more I'm amazed at what he was able to accomplish.
Oh, no question about that. I find it also fascinating that Hemisync is a focused whole brain state that's called hemispheric synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole brain is working. And you've
right.
actually been able to validate that.
Well, yes. But I also want to put a caveat out there, too. For many years, Robert Monroe and Skip Atwater were really interested in this question of how does this stuff work. And for a period of time, they did some brain mapping and looked at the effects of Hemisync on the brain. But Skip Atwater in particular got kind of frustrated with that approach to thing, because no matter how much you measure the physiological correlates of the brain, you can never get to the experience of the person. You know, you can't look at a brain map and say, oh, this person is experiencing that or this. So the research at the Institute began to take a change from that what's called a quantitative approach to research to a more qualitative approach, which was to begin to interview people about their own direct experience so that we could begin to correlate if there were any kinds of differences or similarities between the various stories that they were telling. And so while there was a period there where there was quite a bit of brain mapping that was done, it's not something that we continue to do to this day.
Mm-hmm. I think that the journey that has evolved is a fascinating one. And people from all walks of life, whether they're law enforcement officers, ministers, people that are like stay-at-home moms or professional executives, they run the spectrum of individuals, and when they come together at your facility, none of that counts. None of that is important at all, unless it's just everyday conversation. These people are really looking in their own way for that harmonic in their space so
right.
that they can be even better in their life experience and expression than what they feel they can be. And there's a very poignant story by Mary Graham that's in your material, and she had gone through a deep, deep loss. Her son had died, and this actually enabled her to get through that incredible difficulty because it's a very personal experience. Like you said, you can't
very much
quantify it. It is very, very personal.
I think that's one of the remarkable things about this work is that in a given program, say we might have 24 people in a given program working with two facilitators for a period of, 5.5 days. And everybody is listening to the same experience during that time. But what is really remarkable is how personal and how individual those experiences turn out to be. There's a sense in which it becomes very clear very quickly that each person is coming with their own particular guidance that knows exactly what they need. And I think that's one of the things that's unique about the work that we do is that we are purposely creating a context in which there are no gurus, no one who's going to tell you what you should experience or how you should experience it. All we do is to create a context in which people can explore for themselves. So the last thing that we want for anybody to do is to take our word about anything. It's often been said that Robert Monroe, for instance, would never answer a question. He would just say, well, you go and explore, and then you come back and tell me what you have found out. Mm-hmm. And that freedom for people to explore and then to put it into the context of their own language or their own belief system, however they want to do that, it turns out to be not only have a great deal of integrity, but it also turns out to be very, very powerful because it really does turn out to be a tailor-made experience for each person. So, for instance, in the person you were just talking about, someone who's lost a loved one can not only find some significant healing from that, but there are many cases in which people actually start to make contact with the person who's passed over to the other side. And when that happens from not a second person telling you about it, but from a first-person experience, that makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, it does. There's nothing to equal it. That's why I always have to chuckle when someone will proclaim, well, you know, I'm a skeptic, blah, 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 and I just say, okay, and I smile, and I go, that's okay. Unless until it happens to you, you really, it's not woo-woo stuff. It really does happen, and I've had enough of my own experiences in life. And when it does happen, you don't usually go about proclaiming it to the world because it scares a lot of people just to death, and all you do is just sort of hug it close to your chest, sort of speaking, and say, well, it's mine, it's my treasure, it's my golden nugget, however you'd like to describe it, and you just hold it in your mind's heart, and you keep it there because you know that it gives you something very special in your life.
And that's exactly, I think, one of the marvelous things that happens with the groups who come together. It's really funny to watch them on the first night. You know, they're kind of eyeballing everybody and wondering, you know, hey, I don't know if I'm going to like that guy, or, geez, she's a little bit nutty. But as you go through the week, you know, people come with their armor and their belief systems, but there's a softening within 24 hours. And I think a lot of that softening happens because people can let go of their beliefs and they can just talk about their own experience. And there's no need to argue about your own personal experience. You're just sharing stories at that point. Mm-hmm. And stories are very, very powerful and have the ability to, rather than separate people, to really bring them together.
Absolutely. And it is the power of what I call the real story that touches people and also makes them feel safe. And I think that is significant, because when it's spoken from the depth of who you are and from your own personal experience, you will actually find that people are internalizing it, because so many individuals don't have anybody to talk to, and if they have had experiences of their own, then they don't know what to do with them, or they're frightened by them. And consequently, here they are in an environment at the Institute, at the Monroe Institute, that one is safe. Two, they're not going to be criticized or put down because they didn't see an angel and somebody else didn't, you know, or someone else did, I should say.
Right.
Or they didn't have this humongous vision of, you know, King Kong in a gold lamé suit, or somebody else said, well, all I saw was a mouse. You know, you're not going to have problems with this.
Right.
Because they come into that feeling of safeness. And there's a harmony there, and it's just wonderful. And I am just thrilled to find out something else, and that is that you and the Institute of Noetic Sciences, that Edgar Mitchell started so many years ago, have become joined together in the purpose of expanding communication about both of your modalities, and I think this is just terrific.
Yeah, we really are. We're entering into a period now where I think that collaborations and networking are the mark of our times. The Monroe Institute, for many years, and maybe maybe it was served a good purpose, was to some degree isolated, I think, from the environment around it. I think one of the reasons was because Bob Monroe really did not want to be associated with the New Age movement, mm-hmm. because he felt that it was a little bit too, well, to use the common words, airy-fairy or loosey-goosey.
Right.
And he wanted to be known as something that had some real research behind it and was a very... a very serious but joyful approach to this work. And so I think he kind of isolated it to some extent. But now we're entering a period now where it's so important for us to collaborate with other people because there's so much going on, so much to be shared.
Absolutely. I also want my listeners to know that you, according to what you told me just before we went on the air, the magnificent music of Graceful Passages that was created by Gary Malkin has been added to your catalog,
mm-hmm.
and it is combined with Hemisync, and I can tell my audience the music of Graceful Passages is spectacular,
mm-hmm.
and I highly recommend it, and when Gary put it together, it was to help with the person's transition, but it was much more than that. And I have not found anything to equal what he has made. And so to find that it is part of your catalog is just absolutely
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Your Waves of Love, you've got a Meta Music sampler that's available.
Mm-hmm.
You've
Correct.
Got all kinds of items. And people can get your catalog and can get your information just by calling or contacting. And we'll give out the information. It's the Monroe Institute. And they're at 365 Roberts Mountain Road in Faber, Virginia. That's F-A-B-E-R, Virginia, 22938. Their direct number is 434-361-1252. They also have an 866-881-3440. And the website is monroeinstitute.org. MonroeInstitute.org. And of course, you can email them info@MonroeInstitute.org. Robert, so much has been done since I was at your facility a year ago. I'm just amazed with what you've been able to produce and some of the incredible art that has been developed for your CDs, and that is even available. I mean, it's just amazing, and I would just say to anybody who's listening, if you want to explore various areas of yourself, send for their catalog. Find out about the Hemisync catalog. Get their information on the Institute. The classes are amazing. The people there are so dedicated, and I'll tell you, it is absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous as an environment. Who are some of the people that are on the properties that own some of the home around the Institute there?
That property is called the New Land, and it's a property owners association. But it was originally a property that was bought by Robert Monroe and developed by him, and it was his intention, I think, to kind of create an idealistic community of some sorts of people who were interested in exploring consciousness. But as you can imagine, over the years, as people have come and gone, property has been bought and sold. It's kind of a more traditional community now.
Mm-hmm.
With all the pluses and minuses that go with having neighbors, so but it's still very, very beautiful.
Oh, it
can
is.
Can I mention one thing, if I may?
Absolutely.
You mentioned our catalog. People can just go directly to our website, and they'll be able to find everything that we have in the catalog on our website. And they can listen to samples of the meta music and really explore anything that they want to there. And if they have any other questions, please give us a call.
Absolutely. And before we say goodbye, I want to give a quote out of the Wall Street Journal that had an article on you. One Gateway Voyage alumnus, the 91-year-old head of a Zen Buddhist temple, believes that Gateway Voyage students can reach meditation states in a week that took him years of sitting. His temple now uses audio cassettes and, I'm sure, CDs from the Monroe Institute as a training tool. What a statement, Paul, to be made.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not
bad. My guest today has been Paul Rademacher, and I'll tell you what. His book, The Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe is a wonderful read. It's about his personal journey. You'll find out more about him through that. But the Monroe Institute is not only providing a beautiful place to get away from the hustle and bustle of the world, it also provides you the opportunity, should you want to explore other modalities within yourself. This isn't for anybody else. It would be just for you. I think you might find it well worth that personal investment. Paul, thank you again for being my guest, and I look forward to having you again in the future sometime.
It would be my pleasure, Donna. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. We'll be back with other good things to share with you in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. It's always such a delight to have people like Paul on the air who have walked a walk of experience and now have a chance to share their knowledge with people on a daily basis and to be able to continue to develop insight and understanding into the world of mind. I really think that it is a frontier that will never, ever be totally conquered because it's unlimited, which is exciting. Well, let's open up those phone lines for you, the toll-free worldwide telephone number that you can call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me tell you what I perceive. And then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Oh, before I get into an experience that two women had at Versailles in France, I want to be sure to remind those of you who are listening that are in the state of Washington, the last weekend for the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair is this Saturday and Sunday. Hard to believe, it's just a couple of days away. But it is going to be spectacular. The theme for this weekend is masks and the masquerade. And so there are going to be masks unlike anything you've ever seen in your life that will be on parade. The Queen's Court has their own particular masks that have been designed for them. And we have specialized mask makers that you can get one of your own when you come in. But this is an event that is so much fun. We have got people coming in from all over the state, even outside of the state, that bring their special talents and skills into this wonderful stepping back in time to the Renaissance environment. So I do hope you'll come out. It's being held at the Marist Farm in Buckley, Washington, and the hours are 10 to 6, both on Saturday and Sunday. And we are going to have absolutely magnificent weather, so you won't have to worry about wearing 10 tons of sunscreen like you did last weekend. Nope, this is going to be comfortable times and lots of good food, wonderful people, craftsmen that are going to be out doing their special something that you can see how it was done in the Renaissance. And I think you're just going to have a great time. So tell your friends, bring your family. This is going to be the last weekend of this annual event, and I hope you can join us. And don't forget to stop by my booth. I'm going to be in the booth that has the big yellow banners with the gigantic red lions reared up on those hind legs of theirs. So be sure to look for that. You'll see me in there, and I'll be in my own costume garb. Yes, 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 you'll have to come and see what I get to wear when I go. I just have a great time, as everybody does, stepping into costume for that particular personality we want to be. Okay, and don't forget you can give me a call during the next half hour, 888-815-9756. Well, in 1901, yes, we're going to tap back a little bit in time, August the 10th, in Versailles, France, there were two women that had an experience that in their wildest dreams they could never have imagined. What happened to them? They got stuck in a time warp, for a little bit of time anyway. It took them all the way back into the 1700s. The name of the ladies, well, it was Charlotte Moberly and Eleanor Jourdain. Now, both of these ladies were college administrators from England, and they were touring the gardens of Versailles when they passed through what they perceived as a gateway. And all of a sudden, here were all kinds of people surrounding them, but they weren't dressed as they were. They were dressed in the style of the 1700s. Then they saw all kinds of different buildings, but it was very oppressive. They said they felt like it was just not a very good period, so they weren't at the moment when they were experiencing it able to pinpoint the time. Well, they discovered it was the anniversary of the imprisonment of King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, and they were at the spot where the Queen had received news of the Parisian mob marching on the palace gate. Now, when they reflected on the experience, and remember, both of these women were experiencing this at the same time. They were there looking at each other and then looking at everything that was going on around them. They concluded that somehow or another, they had walked into a memory that had been left by the Queen in the grounds of the chateau that had been there. Now, the woman, Charlotte Moberly, said when she was talking about this experience to others, everything suddenly looked unnatural. She said it was flat and lifeless. There were no effects of light and shade, and no wind was stirring the trees. She noticed a man in a gazebo slowly turning his face, and she saw it marked heavily with the marks of smallpox. She said his expression was ugly. She actually called it evil, and yet he didn't see them. She said it was just uncanny. And she said, I didn't even want to walk past him. He was that unpleasant to me. Yet, she did. Now, she and Miss Jourdain also saw a woman sitting on a stool who was doing some drawing, and for a moment they thought that she was a fellow tourist. However, they looked at her dress. Old-fashioned, 1700 style. Very unusual. And they just had these strange sensations going through them during this entire experience. And they were watching her, and then Miss Moberly said to herself, that is Marie Antoinette. The women ended up walking around this building at Versailles, and there was their tour group. They seemed in their walk to walk out of that time frame, that time warp, right into their tour group, and the oppressive mood was gone. Now, they decided they would go back to Versailles after this particular experience. Remember, both of them were having it at the same time. They decided that they were going to follow the previous pathway. Now, I know we've got a caller, but let me finish this. What they discovered when they went back the second time is that the route that they had walked existed in the palace at the time of the late 18th century, but not at the time of their original tour. The bridges and the gateways were absent, and brick walls and buildings had come up brand new. And most of the changes had taken place 100 years earlier. These ladies wrote a book about it, and the book was called An Adventure. Gives you something to think about, doesn't it? All documented. This is Donna Seaball, and we're going to take our first caller. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Katrina from Virginia.
Where in Virginia, Katrina?
Fredericksburg.
Beautiful place. Of course, I think all of Virginia is beautiful. It is incredibly beautiful. But you can keep your humidity, thank you. I mean, I've been there in the summer, and oh my goodness. Of course, my family. I have family from Virginia, as does my husband. So we just love it. In fact, if you didn't know you were in Virginia, you might think you were in the Pacific Northwest. We have so much in common relative to the green. But Fredericksburg is just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Okay, Katrina, down to business with you. First of all, what I am looking at right off the bat is the word education. You are going to be in and out of educative environments for as long as you live. That's just going to be a part of your life, whether it's through books, seminars, going to college, getting a degree, you know, whatever. You're going to constantly be educating yourself, and you are going to find frequently that becoming a teacher or being involved in teaching is a natural for you. Well, it's just part of your kit that you came in with. That's the best way I know how to explain it. And I want you to enjoy it. I want you to make it okay that you're never going to know it all, but what fun it's going to be for you to share what you do know. Now, the first thing that I am looking at after saying that is there are some projects that you're going to be involved with during the next 2 years that are going to be very, very challenging to you, and administrative skills will be absolutely necessary. No second guessing. You've got to deal with the facts, and your time management is going to be imperative. Now, I don't want to imply that it's all work and no play, but you're going to be really working quite hard, and there's an objective with this work. You're not doing it just for the sake of doing it, trying to prove something to yourself. You have a major objective in front of you, and you want to see it realized, and I agree with you. I think that the dedication and commitment is well worth every moment that you put into it. But I also want to encourage you to take breaks where you literally cut yourself away, take a total break. You do not do any work at all. Maybe make it a 2-day break and refresh yourself. And I know your mind will probably do its somersault back into what, gee, I shoulda, coulda, woulda type of thinking, but you need to make it okay that you don't get stuck there. And if it means doing some hiking or getting involved in taking dancing classes or doing something that's just fun, frivolous, or you could be out chopping wood for 2 days, whatever works for you, it's up to you. But you need to have that break. Because yes, that refreshes you. And then it's like you come back and you've got all of this energy and people go, what in the world are you on? My goodness. And you go, I just feel good. And it's because you have refreshed yourself. And that is a key, especially when you're under very, very intense stress. Take that break. Do something that's opposite of what you're involved with. If you're involved with the right brain all the time, then great. Switch it over to the left. Or if you're doing the left brain stuff, switch it over to the right. Do exactly the opposite for a day or two, and it just clears all the cobwebs away. By the way, pay attention to your intuition. You're right on the money. Mm-hmm. You're very seldom wrong, and you're an excellent judge of people. Do you have a question for me?
Yes, I do. My fiancé is going through a tough time right now, and I was just curious to know if this is something he's going to get past without any more issues.
No, he's got plenty of issues. He needs to go through it. It's as if he's been in diapers. Oh, he'd love this. It's as if he's been in diapers, and now he's supposed to graduate to, what do you want to say, the little boy's big underwear, mentally.
Underoos?
Yes. Yes, that's what he's supposed to graduate to. And then the next thing is, he's going to be in jockey shorts. Boy, he'd really like that one. Anyway, this is the kind of stuff every once in a while I get in my head. But it's as if someone's saying he needs to lighten up and needs to get real. And he's been playing too many games with his head. And he's not wanting to look at things in a mature way, in a grown-up way. And he has gotten stuck in a very immature modality. And that is where, and I have no clue what he's going through at this moment, but this is what I'm being impressed with. He's like a baby wearing diapers. And he doesn't want to do what he needs to do, so he's in the position of controlling himself. Am I giving a clear enough picture here?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it make sense?
Pretty much, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say let him do his own work. Don't worry about it. And you don't need to play mother. All you need to do is just say, I know that you can graduate to the big boy level. I know you can. But it's part of his growth. And he's been pushing it away for so long. He hasn't wanted to do the work. And now he's got to do it. And if he doesn't do it, he's going to have this repeat performance over and over again until finally he says, I give up. Okay, I'll do it. So it's just part of his maturation process, and he can make it as hard on himself or as easy as he wants. It's up to him.
Okay.
You take care of yourself. He can be a big boy. He's okay. You are welcome, and I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you very much.
You have a wonderful
day.
You too, dear. This is Donna Thiebaud. We're going to take a break. Bye-bye, dear. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Thiebaud. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Thiebaud publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I want to let you know about the guest that I have tomorrow. Abe Amider is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about the automotive industry. His absolutely incredible publication, At the Crossroads, is not just a historical research about the automobile industry, how it developed and why it's gotten into the mess that it's in, but it's also a book that is very suggestive of the changes that can be made in the industry that can make it again a powerhouse if it chooses to be. Also on Friday, we're going to be talking about dealing with the overwhelming aspects of technology. Madeline Blair is going to be my guest. Her book is called Riding the Current, and we'll be chatting with her on Friday. So we have a dynamic listing of guests. And don't forget, if you want to find out who's going to be on the Donna Sebo Show, go and check out the information right on bbsradio.com, station one, and you'll find out about the people that are going to be coming up. And there's a little write-up about each one of them and the subject that we're going to be discussing. So that way you can see who's coming in advance. So I invite you to do that. Now, I have a wonderful recipe here for sweet potatoes. How about maple sweet potatoes? Well, I wanted to share that with you, and then there were some other tips that I wanted to share with you as well, and I know our time is a little bit short here, so what I wanted to do was give you what I could, and let me just give you these few little items about trying to find an animal that is right for your family. I've got a fabulous story here that is about Brandy and Val, two dogs that changed the life of a little boy. And I don't have enough time to go into it, but I did want to tell you about some items about getting a perfect dog if you're wanting to find that one for you. There are so many breeds, but they're not all really good for families. Of course, anybody that's ever had a lab or a collie, they're absolutely wonderful with kids. But if you get a pug, a Boston Terrier, or any mixed breed that's part lab or retriever, they are just going to be absolutely wonderful with children. And that's really something you have to think about. And this goes for just about any kind of animal you're looking at. You want to look at the temperament of the animal. And if you want to find a small dog, I have a very dear friend. She's reached a point in her life where she loves dogs. She loves cats. But she absolutely has to have a small dog because she can't deal with a larger dog. She's not as strong as she used to be, and so she loves working with little dogs. Well, if you're on a budget, and I know a lot of you out there are, and you just love to have a dog, you can visit Adopt a Small Dog at adoptapet.com. That's adopt-a-small-dog.adoptapet.com. And they rescue all kinds of little dogs, and you may be able to find that perfect friend for yourself and maybe for your family. And Bichon Frises and terriers, well, they usually can get along with most other animals and most people. But terriers, having Scotties for so many years, you need to really let the dog choose you. Terriers are extremely independent, so if you don't have a lot of patience and you're not willing to accept that independent nature, terriers are really not what you want. Bichon Frises are just wonderful dogs. But remember, shelters are for just about anybody. There are so many animals that are abandoned, that are left behind. There's all kinds of mixed breeds. And, you know, the animals that come from the shelters are really examined very, very carefully, and they tend to have fewer health problems than purebred dogs do. And you will find, and I'll be sharing a story about Brandy and Val with you, perhaps tomorrow, but you will find that those animals, when they bond with you, you'll know it because they let you know it at the shelter. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're lighting up life because you are unique. And when you are unique, take pride in that. Be glad you are who you are. You're one of a kind. That's the way it should be. That's what makes us all so special. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.